racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Hi, and welcome in the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bupka. He's my partner, Jay Randolph Jr., much better known, though, as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, obviously the Masters is over, but there's still what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday here at Normandy, people kept coming out and asking what I thought about it. And then over the weekend, we had a big day on Saturday and everybody was talking about it. One of our pass holders brought a fantastic, I guess you call it almost like a tarp. That is an old Buick promotion with Tiger on it. We put it up in the clubhouse, and people are loving it. It's still what everybody's talking about, Bob.
You know, it's amazing. Got a photograph from a high-ranking guy at General Motors. He's been assigned to Dubai for the last couple of years. Larry Peck was his name, but he ran the Buick event. You knew him very well.
Yep.
And the first thing I get to see on Facebook the day after, a photograph of Larry Peck and Tiger Woods. And Larry said, boy, it was exciting here in Dubai. And I said, well, it was pretty exciting down in Augusta, that's for sure. And no doubt that this is one for the ages. The big question that everybody has, and we've gotten different opinions from different people. I like your perspective on this, Mr. Randolph. You know, people talk about the possibility of this growing the game, Tiger's win.
Right.
Where do you stand on that, Jay?
Well, as I told you last week, I would have loved to have had a bunch of people run out to Dick's Sporting Goods on Monday, buy a set of clubs, find a ranger, of course. I just don't think it's the type of win that does that. You know, so many people that don't even own a set of clubs watch that Masters. I mean, it's good for the game. Don't get me wrong. The Bridgestone reps around the country are fired up. You know, it's great for the upcoming major championships, and it's good for the game. But I don't think it necessarily has as big an impact as some of us in the industry would hope it did.
Well, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, obviously, it would be a wonderful happening if we could generate some more interest in the game. And you know, it's so hard to drive home the message that, you know, playing golf, I mean, it's a sport of a lifetime. I mean,
sure.
You could start out as a youngster and then, you know, play until you drop. A lot of people do.
Yeah. I mean, you look at this week down in Branson, Missouri, one of the few events that still brings together the likes of Nicklaus and Player and Trevino and Irwin and Watson. And those are no spring chickens, as we know. It is a game for a lifetime, but it's a different game that they play than the game that, you know, Joe and Jill Amateur come out here and play at Normandy Golf Club. So, you know, it's good for the game. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know that it has that dramatic an impact on the business side of golf like it did in 97. But his presence is still a very positive thing for the game. And one of the things we got to talk about at some point is, you know, is he done? I mean, as I said last week, I don't get the feeling this was a Jack in 86 so long. I think this is, if I can stay healthy, I got a chance.
Well, that's certainly going to be something we'll be talking about in depth as we get closer and closer to the next major, which basically now right around the corner as we got the PGA Championship coming up. An ideal venue for Tiger, and I think we're going to get a pretty good barometer, Jay, on you know, the what will we see more of the Tiger that we saw down at Augusta, or will we see a 43-year-old that's had numerous surgeries on his body?
Well, and as I said earlier, I don't know that the Masters in itself had the impact, but my goodness, if he goes to Charlotte or if he goes to New York and Bethpage and wins. I mean, it just builds. So, you know, there's that aspect. And I mean, after what we saw at the Masters, after the fact that he's contested in the last three majors, he won the Tour Championship. It seems like everything this year, really everything leading back to the after the win in Atlanta, was all a process to be right for that week at Augusta. Now he's got to continue that, and that's one of the fascinating things. And as we've said, he's got to try and continue that against arguably the best group of the best depth of players we've ever seen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Jay. And I'm going to take this opportunity. You know, people watch golf on television. They see these million-dollar checks. I mean, Tiger made $2 million by winning the Masters. And, you know, everybody has this opinion that, you know, wow, it's real glorious and financially rewarding. You were a pretty good stick. You went to the University of South Carolina. I'm going to share a story of a family that we met, ironically enough, on our trip back from Augusta, Georgia. You know my favorite watering hole, the Beau Rivage in Biloxi, Mississippi. I'm sitting at the blackjack table. There's a gentleman two chairs away that was kind of dressed in golf clothes. And so I said, "Do you play golf?" And he said, "Not really. My son is an exceptional player." I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I just saw probably the most exceptional player of all time in Tiger Woods." And I told him I was at the Masters. He became excited, I should say. Then a little while goes by, and a young man shows up with his mom. It was his son. Now, listen to this story. And I'm not going to use real names. I'll say his first name, Razmé. But Razmé was so good that he won the Connecticut High School State Championship 3 years in a row. But his desire is to be a professional golfer. So his dad, he was 22 years old. He's been out of high school a little while. Did not go to college yet. That's still maybe an option. But here's what his dad and mom said. "Razmé, we're going to give you a chance." Razmé's dad, I should say, went to his boss, said, "I need a year off." They gave him a year off. He tapped into his 401k. They sold a house in Connecticut. They rented an apartment down in West Palm Beach. And they're going to drive to every web.com event that they can, trying to four spot. And prior to four spotting, Jay, they have to go to pre-qualifying. And so we wish them luck. The next stop for him was in the San Antonio area. They drove there. Razmé played in the pre-qualifying. And listen to this. I got the results. One player in that pre-qualifying chopped Razmé by 16 shots. I mean, I said, holy mackerel. The guy had an exceptional round. He shot 10 under, Razmé 6 over. And now they're on their way to Nashville. There's an event down there. What's your take? I mean, Jay, you went through it. I mean, you know, you can – talent you know, it's so difficult in golf to go to the next level. I mean, he's really fighting a big mountain. I'm going to talk to Alex Maselli later in the show about the very same thing. But can you give our listeners just some example, based on some of your experiences, how high that mountain is?
I don't think people can comprehend, because you see these guys on Saturday and Sunday. As you and Janice well know, you don't see the guys that slam their trunk on Friday. And that's just on the PGA Tour. There are over 140 guys trying to qualify for the Canadian Tour this week down in Jacksonville, Florida, at the Die Course at Sawgrass. I mean, there's mini tours everywhere. There are guys trying. There are guys holding that dream. I remember when Bob Estes turned pro out of the University of Texas. He gathered up enough money to come play in the Bogey Hills Invitational in St. Charles, Missouri. Back then, it was kind of the Masters of the Mini Tour. They gave away $40,000 for first prize. He won the tournament. He paid his sponsors back, and he was smooth sailing. But for every Bob Estes, there's 50 other guys. For every Jay Williamson, for every Adam Long, for, you know, it's unique. People, you don't see those guys. You and I see them because we know them. And I didn't have the fortitude to give it a try. I saw guys that were doing it, traveling 3 and 4 in a car, playing in Garden City, Kansas on a Monday for whatever they could make. It's unique. And I saw a tweet earlier today, Bob, and this just gives you an indication of where we're headed. This year, during the men's NCAA Division I season, 45 men or young golfers have shot 63 or lower. 7 of them shot 61. I mean, think about that for a minute. I mean, back when I played in a college tournament, a guy shot 68, you turned your eyes. And you've had 45 63s or lower. I mean, if you want to play, you better be real good. You better want it. You better have a tremendous work ethic. It looks like it's all, ice cream and sundaes on that PGA Tour. But, brother, there are a lot of guys out there fighting it, and gals.
No, you're right about that. Very well said, Jay. I left this young man. The only advice I gave him, I said, first thing every morning, you have to go to your mom and dad and say thank you for doing what you're doing, because they're making an unbelievable sacrifice. And number two, when you're exhausted from practicing and you're ready to walk off the range, you better turn around and spend a couple of more hours there. If you do those things, maybe, and just maybe, if you catch lightning in a bottle, you'll have a chance. So it's just a lot tougher than people realize. Well, let's move on to, it was the week after the Masters. Everybody gets to calm down just a little bit. RBC is the title sponsor, and most, if not all, the RBC Tour players were in attendance. You know, Matt Kuchar, Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson. Unbelievable winner comes out of that. There's another case of somebody coming from nowhere and going on to victory.
I mean, it's the perfect example of what we're talking about. Now, we've known CT Pan was a good player. Spent a year in the Taiwanese military. He's played all over the world, played on every tour. And then all of a sudden, it worked out on a Sunday where they tapped him on the shoulder and say, hey, here's the trophy and here's the tartan jacket. You've won a golf tournament. And, you know, I thought when he made the bogey on the par 5 on the backside, because there's so few opportunities at Heritage, as you know, that might derail him. But he came back with a birdie. He did what he had to do. There were a lot of good players in the mix that couldn't get there. I mean, the human ATM machine. I mean, this Kuchar plays every week. He top tens every week. You had Shane Lowry. You had Scott Piercy. You had Patrick Cantlay off his good performance at Augusta. I mean, this is another case in point where this guy got it done against some elite players. And, you know, he's got a very unique story. This is a huge win for him.
Yeah, it really is. And certainly big news back in Taipan, where he's from. Let's listen to CT Pan talk about his victory.
It's very surreal for sure. And, I mean, I just didn't envision my win like this. And I was so ready for the playoff, too. I just so hard to convince myself that I actually have a shot at winning. It's very hard for me to believe that I actually won a tournament, PGA Tour events, because it's very hard to win. I look at leaderboard three, four times on 16, 17, 15 even. I didn't know Matt Kuchar shot 11 under. I just know I need to shoot 13 under to secure a W, and that's my goal. You know, after 15 holes, I need to make 2 more birdies coming in just to make sure I can win these 2 events. And you know, I always set my short-term goal to help me to focus on the present. I told myself I need to focus on the details, the little things, and just to you know, stay in present. And that really helps me a lot.
Incredible story when you listen to it. And, you know, the real nice aspect, He gives credit to the AJGA, and this past weekend, while he was putting on the tartan jacket, his wife was hosting a tournament, actually right here in Houston, for youngsters, hoping someday to follow in his footsteps. So he's already giving back as a young guy.
Yeah, she didn't even get to go down and enjoy the victory on Harbor Down. I mean, she was there at his own AJGA tournament. And, you know, so many of us, whether we're a broadcaster or a carpenter or a PGA Tour player, have benefited from what the AJGA did and has done for junior golf. I mean, and their growth is astronomical. It's unbelievable how big they've gotten to from the days when I played it. And to see him giving back, to have his wife involved with the event. I mean, a lot of guys just put their name on an event and, you know, maybe send a couple autographs. These guys, they were working this tournament down there in the Houston area. So this is a life changer for this young man. I mean, 27 years of age, he gets his first PGA Tour victory, all the spoils that come with it. Congratulations to CT.
Yeah, and on top of that, Jay, he actually brought 10 juniors from Taiwan to play in the field, and one of them, Haesun Liu, won the girls' division. So CT Pan was very pleased with that. She was winning while he was winning. I mean, the story doesn't get much better than that.
No, it doesn't. And as I said, the AJGA tagline is developing golf's next generation. I played in my first one in 1981 in Dallas, Texas, at a golf course out by the airport. There was a guy named Scott Verplank that won the older that won the older division, and the guy that won the younger division in my age group by 17 shots was a guy named Bob May, who some 19 years later would be taking on Tiger at the PGA Championship at Valhalla. And the other thing, let's be honest, I try and point this out to people. The other thing the American Junior Golf Association did, before them, there were separate, you know, girls' events were separate and boys' events were separate. The AJGA brought them together. They put these young men and women together at the ages of 12, 13, 14, 15, all around the country. And I think it did a lot of good for the ladies' game as well.
Yeah, good point, Jay. And the thing that amazes me about that event that was held in Houston for the juniors, there was a pre-qualifier that you had to play in just to get into the junior event. I mean, it goes back to what you were alluding to at the top of the show. I mean, it's just more and more youngsters, more and more athletes. I think that's the real key. When years ago, it was only cool to be that basketball player, that football or baseball player. But now, athletes, real athletes, in the mode of Brooks Koepka or Dustin Johnson, these athletes in high school are now directing their, you know, athletic prowess to playing golf. And you know, the better the athlete, the better the chance they have of being the better golfer.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And I got an indication here at Normandy, here in St. Louis, earlier this spring. CBC High School, a local high school here in St. Louis, they had 48 kids try out for the team. I mean, back in 84 and 85, when I was playing high school golf, we were begging kids to come out so we could get to eight. I mean, it's good to see. And, you know, we talked about the impact of Tiger's win on getting people involved in the game. When you get right down to it, it's people like the AJGA and the local club professionals and the various organizations statewide and citywide that make the game click. And we need them to continue to do those efforts. The AJGA is a great stepping stone for whether you're going to become a professional golfer or a business person or whatever. It teaches you a lot of different things. You learn how to travel. You learn the you know, the value of money. I am so lucky to have been an AJGA kid.
Well, and I'm even luckier than that. I went to a high school that didn't have a golf team, and I went to the, I went to the athletic director and said, can we get a golf team? A couple of weeks later, I got called in the office. He said, we have a golf team. I said, okay. He said, who's going to play? I said, well, I just think me. None of my friends play golf. So for 1 year, my senior year in high school, I would show up at matches when they would ask for my school team to move up or you know, introduce themselves. I would do it, and I'd get to play the number one guy. So when I think of how far golf has come from back in those days, and to either embellish the story, I learned on a 9-hole golf course that had sand greens. So,
oh, wow.
Next thing, the only thing missing from the story is that Bobby Jones gave me lessons, but no, it wasn't quite that far back. But 9 holes, sand greens, and the rest is history. And I applaud these youngsters. I applaud C.T. Pan's mother, who served as a caddy back home, so that being a caddy gave her son some privileges to play the golf course. I mean, what kind of dedication is that?
Yeah, I mean, there are some unbelievable stories out there, and that's one of them. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, to play In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and you'll be connected. Now, when we return, the mouth that roared, we gave him a break last week, but he's back. He's Alex Maselli, and he's next.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Once again, time for a good friend to come back to the Grill Room. We've missed him for a couple of weeks. He's the founder and publisher of Morning Read, golf's fastest growing news publication. If you don't have it now, just go to morningread.com. Alex Maselli, a couple of things on the docket that I want to address this morning. First, I was listening to some old shows of the Grill Room and came across one where you were asked about the future of Tiger Woods, and you conceded that he probably could win a regular event, but never, ever would win another major. It's been a couple of weeks since the Masters. How do you respond to the emphatic prediction you made that proved to be oh so wrong?
Well, I've been in hibernation, as you know, for the last couple of weeks, unwilling to talk to anyone about this subject. Look, I mean, the end of the day, it surprises you. It surprised me. I'm not the only one that was surprised. Of course, the guy who put $85,000 on Tiger at 14-1 isn't surprised. But look, if it's going to happen, you have to think it would have happened at Augusta with a limited field and a venue that he goes to every year. But that being said, it's still it's still a big thing. It was something that was unexpected, and I bow to the fact that he did it. That being said, I'm still on the same bandwagon of the fact that I think this is it, but I could be wrong. He's 43, looked in great shape, looked great, You need people to help you win these things a lot of times, and you got a lot of help from others. You look back at 1986, and you see, you think, you know, all you think about is the fact that Jack Nicklaus won the Masters, but he won it with Seve Ballesteros, Greg Norman, Tom Kite, to name a few that helped him. If not for their, you know, lack of stamina down the stretch, Jack doesn't win his 18th major. And if not for Koepka and Molinari and a couple other people, maybe Tiger doesn't win his 15th major. So at the end of the day, he did what he needed to do. He was at the top of the leaderboard at the end. And, you know, you can just, as they say in Game of Thrones, you can take the knee and move forward.
Okay. I've never watched Game of Thrones, so that was a good reference on your part, throwing me a little curveball. All right, we're going to switch gears and really seeking your thoughts on something. Janice, our executive producer, and I had the opportunity on our return from the Masters to run into a rather unique family. The father's from Thailand, the mother's from Cambodia, the son had won three consecutive high school golf championships in the state of Connecticut. He's opted not to go to college right now. He's seeking a life as a professional golfer. His dad took a year off of work. They summed up all their savings. They're traveling for a year, going to web.com tour events. You know, obviously the pre-qualifiers that they have to go through. From your assessment, and you've been in contact and I've seen the stories of many, how high is the mountain that this young player is trying to climb?
Well, I'm not really sure there's a mountain high enough, actually. You know, it's first of all, you just have to go to a web.com event or a challenge tour event or what used to be the Hooters tour or, you know, the stuff in the Carolinas, whatever it is. You go to any event where the professional golfers are involved and you just see the talent level. And then the recognition that a lot of these kids are no longer kids. They played in college golf. They've had a lot of experience. They've worked on their games. You know, so now this is their livelihood. This is their jobs. And they understand that if they either make it or they don't, and they have to move on. But they're every day they're looking at the level of talent that they have to beat. And some of these people, you know, they've seen all the time. They see them in these events. They've seen them in college, so forth and so on. So then you roll out there after winning three state championships, which sounds great, and you look at what you're facing, and it's almost insurmountable what you're facing on a weekly basis. So, you know, when you have the opportunity to parlay your great amateur career in high school into the possibility of playing college golf, you absolutely take it, at least the first year. I mean, there's no one that we know in this country that just skipped college. I mean, you know, Tiger Woods went to college, didn't finish, but he went to college. Jordan Spieth went to college. Phil Mickelson went to college. These are all great professionals, but they knew that they needed to go to college first. So I think the fact that this person has taken this road and his parents are supporting him, which is great, at the end of the day makes absolutely no sense at all.
The college that Rory McIlroy went to escapes my mind.
Not in the United States. It's a different country. I mean, clearly, you know, a lot of those kids there's a different rule on how they perceive on things. But I can tell you that the kids in the UK that have turned, a lot of them have gone on to other lives because they cannot make it professionally. I mean, you have to try here. I mean, look, Matthew Fitzpatrick, you know, drive by at Northwestern. Luke Donald went to Northwestern. Graham McDowell went to whatever it was in Alabama, Mississippi, wherever the hell he went to, Tennessee. You know, all these kids, they have tried and then they've gone out from there. The successful kids from the UK. Now, Rory McIlroy is a completely different exception. So if you're telling me this kid's Rory McIlroy coming out, that's great, but he's not.
Well, I was not trying to tell you that. I just was referring to the fact that you said You don't know of one that didn't go to college. So I was trying to refresh your memory.
I'm a little feisty. I was in hibernation for 2 weeks. Come on.
I can fully understand that. Anyway, thanks for your time, Alex. We understand you're on your way to do one of your favorite things in this whole world, and that is to sit in Wrigley Field and watch the Cubs. I hope you have a good time. We'll talk to you soon. Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read.
Well, there you go. The mouth that roars. Of course, now he said the Tiger wouldn't win a major before he won the Masters, but now he says he won't win another major. We'll get back to Alex probably before the year's out. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about the unique event in New Orleans, the Zurich Classic, a team event. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to our final segment here in the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. You can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek. Bob is Bob Bubka, V-O-G, and don't you dare forget that V-O-G stands for the voice of golf. Well, Bob, a place we both love, New Orleans, Louisiana. We've got a golf tournament. I'm not sure exactly why. It's a team championship, but somebody's going to walk away with FedEx Cup points and a bunch of money. And let's be honest, it's also a good place to have a good time in New Orleans.
Well, no doubt about that. You and I have had some good times down there. But before we even do that, Jay, and I think worth mentioning, the PGA of America officially announced they're moving their headquarters to Frisco, Texas this week. It's a big property, multiple courses, a big move for the 29,000-plus members of the PGA of America. Haven't asked your feelings before. You like to move from Florida to Texas?
I understand it. You know, I grew up with knowing guys that used to go down to Florida in the winter and play in the winter series and things like that. So it's a little different for me. But when you look at what they're putting together, multiple courses, learning center, the administration for their 29,000 plus PGA professionals and members. And I mean, you know, virtually you better get ready. This is going to be Valhalla South. I mean, 23 championships in the first 13 years. Now, granted, a lot of those are club pros and junior championships and all that jazz, but you're going to start seeing majors in that area and maybe even a Ryder Cup. And when I say majors, a PGA championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Dallas, certainly a big golf area.
Yep.
We wish them the very best of luck. Seth Waugh, the man at the helm, assures me that this is a good move for the PGA of America. Have to trust him on that comment. All right, you mentioned the Zurich Classic down in New Orleans, a team event, kind of unique where they play foursomes. You know, a couple of days, four balls, a couple of days. In some way, you know, I really give them credit. I mean, they're trying to make it different than just your cookie cutter every week PGA Tour stop. And I think they've done a pretty good job.
Well, as you know, it always had been an event that was kind of a also ran because of where it was on the schedule. And they didn't have very good fields, despite the fact that they put the spread out for the players and treat them like kings. They really struggled. So they came up with this team event. You know, back in the day, they tried it at Disney, a team event. And, you know, it's just a tough deal. But I think you have to give them credit when you look at some of the names like Adam Scott and Jason Day, Stenson and McDowell, Sergio and Fleetwood, and a lot of guys have fun this week and decide to play. You got Davis Love III playing with his son Drew Love, Brooks Koepka playing with his brother. So, you know, there's money, obviously. The folks at Zurich love doing it. New Orleans is a signature city in our country, and I'm glad they're able to do something. It just doesn't make that much sense to me. But, hey, money talks, and they'll golf.
Well, money talks. They're putting up $2 million, so the winning team going to split that. I mean, that's a nice million-dollar payday.
Sure.
I couldn't help but think of Brooks Koepka. He says to his brother Chase, who's, you know, certainly a competent player, playing a lot in Europe, but Brooks, if he wants to take care of his brother forever, let him win down here. And, you know, old Chase will get a nice little check for $1 million, and he can do whatever he wants the rest of his life. Of course, he wouldn't be in the same category as that 24-year-old from Wisconsin who won that big lottery. I think the number was $764 million.
Jeez.
Yeah, but before it was announced, I kept saying, boy, I hope Jay wins it because, you know, then we can go around the world playing some golf.
Could you imagine if you and I won the lottery?
It wouldn't
Holy
last long.
Smokes. No, we'd be in big trouble. They'd be calling from that Beau Rivage that you like to go to and sending us on a jet. The format is rounds 1 and 3, a four ball, which if you don't know is best ball, best score. And then they do alternate shots, foursome style, that we'll see in rounds 2 and 4. So again, you know, it's kind of on the schedule before things start to heat up again in Charlotte and then on to the PGA. So hopefully it'll be a fun week down there in New Orleans. As you and I both know, they set up the food stations. The Pro-Am is unbelievable. The food is phenomenal.
Well, New Orleans known for their food. I mean, some of the best restaurants. You know, a lot of players, believe it or not, they love going to play in the Zurich because they get to dine out in you know, incredible restaurants and have a little fun. First father-son team ever, as you mentioned, Davis Love playing with Drew Love. And little trivia question for our listeners. They want to mention it at their clubhouse. There's only one player in this field that has won in the team format and won the individual title. And that is Billy Horschel. So he certainly loves it down in New Orleans.
And he's paired with Scott Piercy, who were paired together last year. And Piercy showed some life at Harbortown. So keep your eye on those two.
Yeah, Scott Piercy, a 40-year-old from Las Vegas, seems to have a tremendous amount of game. I look for him to break through. Wouldn't surprise me if even Scott Piercy, next couple of years, plucks off a major.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.